Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 14, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and open the discussion today on Senate Bill 971, the School Capital Construction Fund. There's a number of people here who will discuss some of the needs of which this bill is intended to address. I think I'll just take a couple of minutes tell you a little bit about the bill, why it has been brought forward, and why I believe it would be an excellent mode for us to endorse. We all know about the need for the physical facilities in our schools here in the state. I think in your districts represented, and I'm certainly familiar with yours as well as my own, the capital construction needs, the maintenance needs of existing facilities are significant. The legislature has continually attempted to address those issues as recently as the last legislative session in 1997, in which $150 million was bonded specifically for purposes of which were maintenance and capital funds of our facilities. One of the problems that local districts face, however, is coming up with those revenues, which of course are done primarily through bonding in the local community for funds to do that. In some districts, for example, the North Clackamas School District, which is in my district, attempted three times before they finally passed a bond levy to build a new high school in the Clackamas area, which of course is the fastest growing area in the metro area under the 2040 plan. Also in my district, the Oregon City School District, Candy School District, the Sandy School District, the Gresham Barlow School District, some of which are represented here today, have been struggling maintaining existing facilities as well as accommodating the growth in the future. Part of this, I think, reflects the fact that the electorate is concerned about growth, they're concerned about dollars. I think there's been a growing concern about where is the state's interest in helping us with our facilities. And Senate Bill 971 attempts to address part of that by making a commitment by the state for some help in maintaining school facilities and constructing new school facilities. Currently, under Oregon revised statutes, we have a school capital construction fund of which there are no funding mechanism attached to it. Senate Bill 971 establishes a funding mechanism. What it does, it caps lottery expenditures in any biennia at $600 million. Now, that figure was deliberately taken because of the fact, as you all know, the lottery is only projected to hit $570 million this biennia. And in the forecast that we received on Friday, actually that number is expected to decline in the next biennium. So from a realistic standpoint, there likely would not be any capital in the next 4 to 5 years for this fund. But it does two things. Number one, it establishes the commitment of the state as a partner with local districts and their school needs. Secondly, if in fact the lottery once again exceeds the $600 million cap, that those dollars would be committed to help supplement local school bonding for school maintenance, repair, and capital construction. We're all concerned, I think, about the lottery. We're concerned about the fact that we have increasingly using it as a source for debt service, which then, of course, in each subsequent legislative session produces less dollars for the legislature to be able to allocate. This makes a statement that there is going to be a cap to using this simply as a debt funding mechanism and actually as a commitment to schools. My hope would be that those funds would, in fact, actually start to grow and to actually meet those needs of our schools. But it certainly sets a strong legislative stance. This is a top priority of this legislature. The $600 million limit, again, is not expected to be reached anytime in the near future. I think it's a commitment, however, that is important. I think in our own districts we realize that having state involvement in the issues that are concerning us, I think, is important for local citizens to know that we recognize that. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll close my comments. I'd be happy to take any of your questions and let the real experts discuss the needs which 971 addresses.
Sure.
I'm wondering how your cap fits with
the 15% requirement for the investment fund.
Right. The way the bill is written is that all existing requirements have to be met first. So the 15% requirement for the Education Endowment Fund, the 15% requirement for Parks and SAM, and all have to be met. Theoretically, if the lottery, let's say, were at some point to hit $900 million, then you would still have 50% of $900 million, 15% of, and then immediately the debt obligations up until that point above $600 million would then go to the school construction. So you would always have to meet all the legislatively approved requirements of the lottery first before anything above $600 million would actually go into the fund.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Dallas, did you want to? Let's hear one more testimony and we'll have Steve Miller, Sandy School District.
Good morning, Chairman and Committee. I apologize a moment. Here you have a document in front of you, and I realize that the second page has our district name on it. I'm Steve Miller from Canby School District. You might want to scribble Canby just on the front page of the statement. It says Building and Local School Committee Review Project List, and we settled self-reference, and I apologize for having it on the front page. I wanted to indicate to you that between 1993 and 97, Canby School District sustained a 13% reduction in its current service level budget. Those cuts amounted to $3,700,000 over that period of time. Now, that did not happen in the last biennium, thank goodness. That the bleeding ceased. During that time, all of those cuts were away from the regular classroom. And so, therefore, you can imagine that a great share of those cuts indeed occurred in the support services and in maintenance and construction and the like. Another impact of those reductions was that I want to always, when I get a chance, just briefly say, you know, why don't you cut out the fat? And I think we tried to do that. Our administrative ratio is at 3.2%. It's the 33rd lowest out of 37 school districts of an average daily membership of 3,000 and above. More specifically related to the items around this bill, however, is that when we started our unification processes in 1993, the four combined districts spent approximately $700,000 annually on maintenance and custodial needs. And today we spend $250,000. Before you are a list of defined several times needs on a bond maintenance list, and you can see that they're maintenance oriented. In fact, we have some minor remodeling construction, but it really is just almost day-to-day maintenance kinds of needs. And you can see, for instance, in the ratio of if we were spending $700,000 annually, now we're spending $250,000, that you could get to a $16 million figure fairly easily over a period of time there. We went out for a bond last fall and narrowly missed that bond. And one of the statements made about, well, out of 10,000 votes, 131 gap there, why didn't that issue pass, was that, well, you know, most of the time when you submit a bond, you have need for a building and such and so forth, and we are growing. But that wasn't in there because we do have some space and some time. But it just didn't catch the imagination of the people. And the second statement kind of was, why aren't you placing those items in your regular annual operation? And the answer was real clear, but obviously not as broad spread or known as it might be. And that is that those were the items, along with others in the support service areas, that were reduced to cost to protect the classroom in the last 4 years prior to this last biennium. We didn't do that in the last biennium. One further item related to the focus of this bill, and that is that if indeed, and there is some federal focus, there is continued discussion at the state level about directing a class size kind of scenario in kindergarten through three at 20 students. If that were to happen, then all the items that you see before you in a maintenance kind of thing would be there. And in addition, we would need 20 additional classrooms in Canby School District to be able to respond to that level of initiative. Again, I thank you for listening to me talk about some of the specifics and try to limit my comments. And I also would respond to any questions.
You talked about the bonding process. Could somebody sort of reacquaint me or refresh my memory as to what the limitations are now under Measure 15 and Measure 5 and what sort of hoops you have to jump through in order to go for a local bond?
Of course, you have a supermajority, which means, you know, except if it's in an even numbered year in a general election. Otherwise, you have a supermajority, which is 50% of the registered voters. Okay. Secondly, there are some limitations related to what can go in the bond, mainly tied to, you know, construction or remodeling, for instance, such things as technology or the support, or even, you know, classroom furniture and those kinds of things are outside. Those are the limits, briefly, that I understand. But it's a different.
Is there a limit on your authority?
Yes, Superintendent, thank you for coming in this morning. You're new to Canby District, right?
No, 9 years.
Oh, 9 years. Okay, I thought there was a new superintendent.
There is, she's Dr. Deborah Summer.
Oh, okay.
This was appointed. She'll start on July 1,
okay.
I'll complete 31 years in the business.
Oh, good. Well, your district has a fine reputation. I was going to ask if the circumstance in the district that you just came from, but since you've been there all those years, we got the information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Rush?
Just a comment. We did get to visit Canby in one of our school tours, and we were very impressed with the quality of instruction and the dedication of the staff there. But we did see problems, leaking roofs, and other problems with your buildings as we went through, and it was clearly pointed out to us that in order to protect class size, that your buildings had to take second place, and we sympathize with that problem.
I appreciate your understanding. You know, one of the issues around it is if you just drive through and around, buildings look nice, the grounds even look fairly nice and so on, kids come to school every day, etc., until you understand that classrooms actually are interrupted by the physical changes and leaks and that kind of thing, and then class size changes because of that. You have to really look in there, as you did, to recognize that the general population struggles with understanding that.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
James Buck. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm Jim Buck. I'm Assistant Superintendent with Gresham-Barlow School District, and I appreciate your time this morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I brought some information to share with you, and I certainly only want to highlight some points this morning. And this school district, Gresham-Barlow, which I represent, is the ninth largest school system in the state when you look at enrollment, geographic size, but enrollment. We have 17 schools, an alternative site. We serve 11,300 students. Our district's been fortunate in terms of voter support for bond measures in the last 10 years. Our recent bond measure in 1996 provided $32 million toward maintenance and technology, not toward additional instructional space. We had numerous roofs which needed repair, numerous improvements that we needed to make because of the state of our facilities. As I indicated on here, we have three of our schools were built in the early 1920s, and some of the legislators who were on tour had a chance to see, you know, at least one of those schools, West Gresham, and the challenges that these older structures represent. even the structures that we have built in the 1950s, McCarty Middle School, for example, is a good one. Is you go in there, you know, the water is not considered potable by staff and students. You know, it's orange tinted. You certainly can forgo Jericho for years by probably inviting for a week because of the iron content. So there are just, even after this bond project, there are just numerous things that still need to be addressed. What I shared with you on the attached pages is a study which we completed in 1998 using DLR. And it pointed to bond projects, improvements, and capital projects totaling $20 million that still need to be completed. And that's just on the heels of this bond campaign. And it doesn't address a third area on technology, which we have determined just to maintain present equipment and what would be seen as reasonable continuation of replacement, wiring changes, et cetera, of $2 million a year. It doesn't address that. Some of our buildings, as I've noted, have gone without paint. Mentioned East Orient, which was last painted by inmates from the Restitution Center back in 1987. Because of the cost, you know, the schools are trying to find ways of getting this work done at the least cost. But it's a challenge because most of our dollars are going to support instruction. And each year it seems like we take more and more out of maintenance in order to support the cost for instruction. We're looking next year at $630,000 being needed just for roofing, painting, paving, and carpeting. We have numerous schools that still have their original carpet from the construction date of the 70s. It just needs, from a safety standpoint, in some schools to be replaced. We have, unfortunately, some real space, chronic critical space needs. I mentioned in my notes that the federal government in its class size reduction only provides us 2.5 teachers. So it's not going to really make a dent in the primary class size, which now averages 26 in grades 1 through 3. Actually, it's 27 if we looked at all of elementary. But we do not have spare classrooms in two of those schools, even to house one additional teacher. So that teacher is going to have to be, at this time, unless we can remodel or add a module, going to have to be a floating teacher. So here we're gaining, at the elementary, 2.4% additional students per year, and we have no classroom space to house those students. One school, Deep Creek Elementary in Damascus, which has three classrooms available, is more than 5 miles from the nearest school. So it doesn't seem reasonable to transport those students all the way out to Damascus in order to provide them with an elementary education. And have them, we already have students riding into special education class at Deep Creek 1 hour one way, just to get out for that primary special education room. We wouldn't want to subject more students to that kind of bus ride one way. So we have obviously some space issues. We have some things that just have not kept pace with the changes in education. We've added, through the bond, computer labs and telephones in each of the classrooms, and really updated computer labs. But we haven't been able to address all the HVAC issues that go along with having 30 computers and 30 students and staff in an area that sometimes is very confining. So you have heat issues that make very uncomfortable learning environments. So there's just fine needs for maintenance and space. And not only in our district, but I think ours is not unique around the state. I think ours would be seen as very typical if you travel around. We're also faced with a number of our classrooms needing to address the increase in special education needs. Special education students in academic support, so these are students who would be autistic or have severe needs or have strong behavioral disorders, that population has doubled in 3 years. So we've had to set aside some of the classrooms that we had he's planned for growth now to address special education. And that's what leaves us in the lurch at this time.
I'm sure. What accounts for the growth in special education population?
Well, at least given our, I guess there are multiple causes. I think we're starting to see the impact in part from drug, alcohol, fetal syndrome. I think we're beginning to feel the impacts of really dysfunctional families of students who are going through foster care and the placement of additional foster care facilities in our district. The majority of these students are transfers from other districts. They're not ones that we've seen come through our system, but they've been coming from neighboring districts, including Portland. But we're seeing an upsurge throughout East Metro area, throughout the county. So it's hard for us to know what's causing this rise. I think there's also a need perhaps to serve these students in a specialized environment because the classroom size is at 27, 28, 30 in primary classrooms. And I think the teachers are recognizing they can't address the IEP with 30 students in the classroom. So the committees are seeing the need for specialized instruction. The last point I wanted to make, happy to address questions, is on security.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has Gresham had a bond recently?
In 1996 was our last bond for maintenance and technology.
Did it pass?
Yes. It gave us $32 million. It's under the second bullet there at the top. It wasn't for added instructional space. It was just to repair roofs. You made the comment about Candy. Prior to that bond, you would have seen buckets, numerous buckets in some of our school hallways just to catch the leaking water on a weekly basis. So we just had chronic needs that needed to be addressed to maintain the livability of our school.
So it was primarily roofing and
exactly.
Heating systems,
some restroom repair, plumbing repair.
Correct. How many schools were repaired in 90?
We had actually projects in all of the 17 schools through the 96 bond.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And the last issue is just with security needs. And these have become more apparent, obviously, with the state of incidents in our state and around the country. But we have schools that were not designed with security in mind. Even in the last bond, though, we did change two of the schools and move their offices to the front of the school. But we have other schools where the offices are in the middle of the school. They weren't thinking of these issues in terms of visibility for visitors and other people when they were constructed. So there's a need to really look at some of the security concerns in the remodeling just to make them safer environments. I mentioned here schools that have no interior doors, have no interior locks. So when we speak about lockdown in three of our schools, it's a total impossibility. Once you're in the school, you have access to every single room in the premises. So there's a need to examine, is that the safest environment now given, you know, the situation and given what our expectations are from parents. I'll close here.
Okay. Representative Blair.
Thank you. Mr. Buck, what percentage of your budget do you set aside for deferred maintenance when you're putting your budget together?
Right now, it's approximately 9% would go for maintenance, custodial, grounds, capital projects.
If you were to do projection based on what you say these needs are over a 10-year period of time, what would that percentage be?
Well, we're looking at trying to convert that to a percentage. If we were to look at the $20 million and that was captured here and add $2 million for technology, that was annual. But let's say we were to spread that out even over 5 years, that would be an additional $4 million a year out of our general operating budget for next year's plan at $71 million. So, you know, I think we're probably looking at somewhere between about another 6% that we would need to add in order to handle maintenance projects. We're concerned. We do have, to be very candid, we do have $3 million in Measure 52 funds.
Okay.
And we're really appreciative of those dollars. Our concern is when those $3 million, we've got $20 million in needs, when those $3 million are spent, which is going to be very quickly, you know, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
There really is, and the limitations now on bond measures that can't go for maintenance needs, given the limitations of staff. So that's the concern.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Any closing remarks?
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Ozzy Rose.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good morning. I'm Ozzy Rose, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. The two gentlemen from the local school district that just appeared before you are from Senator Metzger's district. I could bring in 198 superintendents and tell some of their tales, but I'd like to bring a few things to your attention. The first, on a note of levity, you often hear teachers nearing the end of their career talk about, I'm now teaching students, or sons and daughters of students at Johnson. Mr. Miller is retiring, and his father was a superintendent in our association back when I was first starting. So I'm now watching members retire whose fathers remembered from the retired association.
That's because you're so old, huh?
And there's no end in sight. To the bill. We are supportive of the bill, but I'm primarily here to talk for a minute about our infrastructure issues in Oregon. And the issues that were just shared with you from two school districts are common in the state, but they're also common in our country. In the late 1980s, our National Association published a document called the Lower Red Schoolhouse that chronicled the state of our infrastructure in K-12 schools across the nation. And it was deplorable, and it focused mostly on inner city, which were the older schools. Most of our cities are older. But that problem has spread throughout our school system. And you have a bill in your possession that was introduced on the Senate side, 1229, I believe, is the number that suggests we ought to do an inventory of our infrastructure in this state, a real inventory. You have a good inventory of your infrastructure problems at higher ed, because you have a single organization. And it is probably, and you're probably not going to do that this session, but it probably makes good sense to start thinking about what is our responsibility and obligation, et cetera, at the state level for the infrastructure in this state-funded school system. Lebanon School District is using portables that have been used for 30 years, and 30-year-old portables weren't designed to last 30 years. So, in Baker, the bricks are falling off the outside of the building. And it's on and on, those kinds of stories. And if we're going to address this problem appropriately, we probably should do some very careful analysis of the total infrastructure needs. And the infrastructure problem has become more acute. As noted, measure 50 narrowed what we can do with maintenance money and instituted the double majority, which makes it more difficult to pass funds. And we have more and more needs for what were things that we did under bonding. And the technology is an example. Everybody tells us we need to become more efficient, use technology to increase your ability to provide an instructional program, use distance learning, be more efficient, use the technologies available. Technology is very, very expensive. And once you get it, it's very expensive updating. I don't know which ones of you are running businesses up here, but we have just a little operation, and technology is a black hole, as far as I'm concerned, on the budget-making side, which I'm responsible for. And we can't do that stuff the way it ought to be done if we don't approach the maintenance and construction problem in a little different way. I'd like to bring your attention to, you have a statute, ORS 327-300, that we passed in 1993, and you funded it for 1 year. And it's a facilities and construction and maintenance grant for public school facilities. At that time was set up, and it's still set up. It provides a one-for-four match. A dollar by the local school district generates $4 from the state to do maintenance and facilities. And it had a cap of $500,000. None of those numbers are appropriate, but the public policy that's in the in that section of law is very good public policy as far as getting us into the long-term addressing our infrastructure needs. And if we funded it just well enough, at that time there were so many grants that they couldn't be funded, so they chose a way to distribute them. They put them all in a hat and drew them out lottery style. It's probably not the way you would address that long term. But you have in the statute good public policy that isn't funded. The proposal to use the excess lottery funds to help fund that sort of thing, I think, is a rational proposal. I suspect, had we known exactly what the lottery would amount to 20 years ago or whenever it was we started, we probably would have taken some different use of lottery, and infrastructure would have been a good place to, but that's water under the bridge, as they say. So, in summary, there is a need for the state to be involved in the maintenance and capital needs of our local school district. Our infrastructure is in very bad shape. The reason we need to be involved more than in the past are primarily because of the change in the election laws regarding the narrowing of what we can do with bond money, plus the difficulty of getting bonds passed. The third issue is that growth creates demands on operations, and a lot of growth in one area creates demands that isn't, that aren't in other areas, and we need to find ways to help with that. And so I encourage you to look carefully at whether you, this bill doesn't do anything in the immediate future because it doesn't generate funds, as the Senator noted. But the issue we need to do some thinking about and start planning for, and some of you are going to come back in these next sessions, and I encourage you to take a careful look at the intent of 1299, even if we, if you aren't able to pass it, it would take some staffing and so forth to do it. But it would be a real rational thing to do is say, let's look at every school district in some systematic way and find out what are the needs. But I suspect you won't be able to do that. With that, I'll quit and answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Rose?
On the issue, the limitations, I'm still not quite sure. What are the limitations that they are of all of these new initiatives and measures and things like that?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, I'm afraid you'd ask a specific question like that. I can just give you a couple examples. One, we used to, when you have to fix a roof, you fix out of bonding money. Now, if you're going to build a new roof, a re-roof of an entire building, you can use bond money for that. If you're only going to fix part of it, you have to use that out of your operations money. We used to, when you bond, you'd get a lot of your furniture to start a new school in that bond. Now, you can't do that. It has to be and I forget the exact language, was connected to an integral part of the construction of the building. So when you open up a new school, you've got all of the cost of furnishing, et cetera, and you used to could do that inside the bonds. Now you have to do that operations. Steve just whispered my ear, to open a middle school for them, they believe the first year they opened it cost them $900,000 in operations money to do stuff that most of which would have been done under the bonding. And I was involved in a lot of the debates on the rules. We've debated the rules about what could or couldn't be bonded for 25 years. And always the pressure was to narrow it so we didn't misuse our bonding authority. Now, the real impact, if you're a critical, is how we do things. That was the argument. And so we kind of placed that in statute. We narrowed that. And then the double majority says if you either have a 50% turnout and pass it, or you wait and do it in a general election where you do it. And at a general election, because very few can get, and it's just a double majority on another election, so everybody waits to go to the general election, and you have lots of issues. And anytime you have lots of issues, some like this and some like that and some like this one, and pretty soon you don't have a majority for any of them, so it makes it very difficult to pass under that. So that's the two issues. And if you want more specific, I'll go back and read it carefully.
I just knew there were some problems.
The issue about being an integral part of the construction is the one that really narrows what we can do.
Senator Hartman?
Yeah, Ozzie, as you know, Beaverton School District opening three new schools. They're afraid it's going to cost them about $6 million to do that. Certainly don't have it on the regular operating budget. Tell me, I'm sure you're familiar with Representative Ken Strobeck's bill for growth. Does that complement what we have before us today or create a problem? Explain that to me.
Madam Chair, Senator Hartman, we're opposed to the reference bill, but I'm told I don't understand it, which I think I do, by the way.
this wouldn't be the first time, would it?
Yeah, right. Our problem with we need to do something. That's it. And I'm here to tell you that. The problem with Representative Strobeck's bill, which was introduced by Beaverton, Hillsborough, and the homebuilders, is that it rolls off of the rolls the new construction for a period of time. And if you carefully look at the impact district by district, that the money doesn't necessarily, it doesn't match up. Like Hillsborough does very, very well in that bill. Beaverton doesn't do so well. In fact, I think in careful analysis, Beaverton actually loses the money out of their operation more than they gain. Now, they tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. I think I do. Everybody loses money out of their operation to fund that approach, and they lose it for 8 years. And 8 years out, the cost of that bill is up in the $100 million-plus range.
Excuse me. They lose money because 30% of the operational budget of a local school district comes from local property tax.
Correct. If you don't, this new revenue, we project this new tax that's going into the pot. If you don't put it in the pot, then it's not there. And
yeah.
The first year it's $19 million or whatever it is, where you set it. But you do it for 8 years, it compounds. And if we'd done it 8 years ago, where we're here today and talk to you tomorrow, when I know you're going to consider 495 or something as a funding level for schools, you would have to make up this 150 or 200 million that's not there if this had been in effect 8 years ago. That's our problem with the bill. Now, our problem is not that there isn't a need to address the facility.
Yeah. But in a growth district, like you mentioned, in Hillsborough, the fact that there's so much growth, couldn't that local property tax revenue be used without cutting into the district's operating budget that is drawn from the 30% of the operating budget from local property? Wouldn't there be enough growth there to overcome that?
Madam Chair, Senator Hartung, if you don't put the new property tax into the pot,
okay,
the pot smaller, and the entire pot smaller. The analysis that I've seen, specifically on Beaverton, the amount they would not put in, they're affected by everybody not putting it in. So the run that they showed us to drop the dollars per student for operations, and yet they keep the other aspect. And Hillsborough makes a great team. Beaverton, the numbers they've shown us, Beaverton actually loses in that exchange. Other districts, there's 198 districts, and 161 of them lose more operating money than they gain in capital with that procedure. And again, the issue is not to not have to try to address it. We just don't think that's the appropriate place to address, way to address it.
And
didn't come here to knock that bill, by the way.
No, I know. And would you agree that basically the bill we have in front of us, probably nothing will happen because we will not exceed the $600 million in the next two biennium? Is that correct,
Mayor Senator? That is correct.
Okay.
So what you could do is take a look at ORS 327-300 and actually place some of the funding, even the portion of funding that the amount that was going to be generated in the Detroit bill, you could directly fund the grant thing and create some money in that manner for those issues.
One more question. Do you have an opinion on what the I think it's New Hampshire doing the governor. There in the courts have said you shall not finance your schools with local property tax. So it appears they're going to successfully implement a statewide property tax and the money will go out in front of them. What do you think of that?
Madam Chair, I'm not familiar with that, but I'm interested in any idea that would create a more stable process than we're going to have in this state over the next decade, that's totally dependent on the income tax and lottery to fund our schools. We've been very, very fortunate in the 1990s, and you're all well aware of that. And we are going to have a downturn in the economy. And at that point, I was here in 82 when we came back five times and lowered the budget five times because of the downturn. It didn't impact schools that much. I think we only lost $12 million in the entire operation because we didn't get much of our money from the state.
Okay.
The next time you come back five times in special session, one by any lower in the budget, it will significantly hit the school. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that.
Any other questions? Any closing remarks? Okay.
Oh, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Berry?
morning, committee member Scott Berry with the Oregon Building Industry Association. Just briefly, I'm certainly no expert in the school finance and funding arena, but Oregon Building Industry Association and our local 15 home builder associations have been very involved in financing and helping to finance the campaign for school bond measures. We think this this bill, if it does eventually get some funding, if you actually get lottery money that is over the $600 million, will provide some incentive for local districts to pass those bond measures, especially if they do have the grant tied to it. So we are in favor of the bill, and I think it's a good actually. Senator Hartung, in answer to your question, we certainly feel it's a compliment to Representative Strobeck's bill. That's about all our testimony from the association. I do have one possible conflict of interest to mention. My wife does teach the fifth grade of youth in schools.
Any questions from various ones? Thank you very much. We don't have any more witnesses. They want to visit this bill over in the Trade and Economic Development. Dallas, did you want to make any comments on the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you do have a fiscal impact. Legislative Revenue Office has reviewed the numbers, and it has issued no revenue impact. Again, no revenue, as Senator Messer indicated, the next fiscal biennium. Should it exceed the $600 million at some point down the road, the revenues, then the Department of Education would be tasked with developing policies, procedures for the grants, and they are to be not 100%, as there would be the grant requirements would provide for local funds in addition to state funds.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I apologize for missing the discussion. Actually, this is a huge issue, honestly. And I guess one of the things I was interested to know was we actually just passed a bill in the House that I believe started to limit how much you could take, say, the capital lottery, of which the overage would go on the common school fund. So I'm not sure we've got some conflict already, this one bill that's moving out of the House. This is a good idea, although I would contend that it isn't. It's really not going to do much, quite frankly, and that we really do need to look long-term. I don't know if there was a discussion of trying to wrap that inventory bill into this, because that, to me, seems like that would make a lot of sense. I think setting this up as a capital fund is fine, but up to $5 million for school districts is, that's in the scheme of things, a fund that's not super meaningful. So I think we need to look longer term at how else we could raise money for helping school districts in this. But I just wanted to raise those issues. I didn't know if, because again, there's a bill that did just come out of the House. There's a resident Lundquist bill that did that. So I'm not going to make sure that works for those as well.
Any other comments?
Madam Chair, I had an opportunity to talk to Senator Metzger about this, and notwithstanding my friend and colleague, Senator Edwards, just at least for the plan for the future. One of the few ones I've seen. And so I think I applaud him for coming up with it. It's a great idea.
Well, with that, we'll close the public hearing, and we are adjourned, and have a good day tomorrow. So great to everybody. Be on time.